Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255 and, of course, visit michaelsavage.com. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Breitbart of Breitbart.com, Breitbart.tv. I don't like this part of the show having to mention all gazillion of my websites. Breitbart.tv, big government, big journalism, big Hollywood. One day, it's all going to be under Breitbart. It's all going to make sense, but just bear with me while I launch about 10 more of these big sites. And one that we're going to have to launch sooner rather than later is Big Tolerance. These Democrats, these liberals, these leftists are the most predictable species of animal in the known universe. And they spent the last year and a half shoving down our throats healthcare reform. There is not a single poll in the universe, not even their internal polling, nothing they could do could make healthcare reform something that the American people wanted or wasn't ever in the top five things that the American people thought the administration needed to prioritize. But because of the president being a bought and sold product of the SEIU, and who is going to turn the public sector unions into a cash machine for the Democratic Party, this was a political move to spend the last 14 months of an almost unbearable time in American history when the recession seems not only, you know, never ending, it seems like we've doubled down on it with incredibly bad policies, a stimulus that isn't working. And they spent 14 months trying to shove healthcare down our throats, and they put everything into it. Rahm Emanuel, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, they put everything into it. So now that they got their stinking deal, what's next for the Democrats who were one-trick ponies for 14 months going into May of 2010? That trick, as if we had Big Tolerance up, it would be the number one topic there, and that is the race card. These despicable Democrats, the despicable Black Congressional Caucus, which is used in 2010 as a symbol of race oppression when this country has made such huge strides because the Democratic Party needs this dissent in our country. They play it, they flame it, they stoke it. And on Saturday, I stayed home to watch cable news, to watch this historic shoving down of our collective throats, the healthcare debate, the healthcare bill. And I watched something that, to me, I almost don't have words to describe it. All I can tell you is that the Democratic Party is not the Democratic Party that I used to consider myself a member of up until about 1994. I just started to disagree with it. But what I have started to see in this party in the last decade, and especially this weekend, put on display by having the Black Congressional Caucus go to the 30,000, 40,000 strong Tea Party people who were protesting peacefully, and to walk through that crowd as an awesome act of symbolism, trying to convey that the Tea Partiers are racist, with their hands defiantly up in the air, holding their own video cameras, The rest of the crowd had their own video cameras. America is an armed nation with video cameras, with Blackberries, with flip phones, trying to discover, trying to find, trying to stoke the Tea Party movement to do something it has refused steadfastly and righteously to do for the last 14 months, and that is to take the bait. But it didn't matter if the crowd of 30 or 40,000 led by Michelle Bachmann, the honorable congresswoman from Minneapolis, from Minnesota, and John Voight, the brave actor from Hollywood, it didn't matter that this was a peaceful, middle American, straight down the line, mainstream march that represented the majority's opinion on this health care bill. Those people were there chanting, "Kill the bill." Kill the bill was the sentiment of the majority of the people in this decent nation. Yet the Congressional Black Caucus made its strong move, and that strong move was to act as a racial block and to walk through that crowd trying to get a provocation. And what did they get? They got nothing. But what did they do with their nothing sandwich of walking through that crowd? They went to the press, who broadcast that the N-word was yelled 15 times. Not once, not twice. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to say 15 times. It is such a preposterous notion that in America in 2010, at the Capitol, people there who are trying to express their concern about health care reform, that the people would start chanting the N-word. If that is how the Congressional Black Caucus feels about its fellow Americans, if that, then they don't deserve to represent us, or they should be the objects of ridicule. We can no longer abide by political correctness in this country. What George Bush called the soft bigotry of lowered expectations. We cannot allow for John Lewis to, every time he steps in front of a camera, to say that this man is a venerable civil rights activist. I don't care what he did for 40 years ago. He's trying to rip this country apart falsely by accusing the American people and the Tea Partiers of being racist. Nothing could be more false. And here's what you need to know about this. I put out a post today on all of my sites in which I offered $10,000 to John Lewis to give one bit of evidence of one example of somebody saying the N-word in that audience, with all the cameras that even members of his own entourage were carrying. You show one example of the N-word being thrown out there, and I will give $10,000 to the United Negro College Fund without irony. And if you can't provide that, even though this is a YouTube nation and everybody in the crowd had a camera, including your entourage, then I'm even willing to give you the benefit of the doubt that they whispered this inaudibly. They screamed in their lowest audible voice so it couldn't be picked up on the thousands of cameras and audio recording devices. I'm going to allow for you, John Lewis, to take a lie detector test. And if you pass it, I will give $10,000. It didn't happen. And right after that, after they walked through there, through that horrible crowd of Tea Partiers, what happened next? Nancy Pelosi herself walked through there with a smug look on her face, carrying that massive gavel. Now, if Capitol Police or her own security were under the impression, as was already widely reported, that everyone there was spitting and spewing the N-word, There's no way in hell that Nancy Pelosi would be given the go to walk down there and to walk through that violent, vile crowd. Instead, Nancy Pelosi is leading this charge. After the break, we will play you the audio to me that shows that this is the strategy of the Democratic Party. They're finished with health care. They have an obligation. That obligation is to kill the Tea Party movement. It is to kill dissent in this country. It is to take the majority that were against the health care reform, who are amassing, who want to repeal the health care reform, and they are going to try and kill the Tea Party movement by falsely accusing it of being racist, accusing it of being violent, all the while the entire buildup for health care reform was filled with acts of violence by the SEIU, the group that single-handedly benefits the most from this thing. The hypocrisy is astounding. If we as Americans do not hold these people accountable, including John Lewis and the Black Congressional Caucus, you are sacrosanct no more. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
In the course of the debate, you know, it's been a lively one, and certain words have gone back and forth that we had thought were part of the sad history in our country in terms of the civil rights movement, but all who participate in their free expression should not be painted with the same brush of those who have resorted to such unacceptable language and acts of vandalism.
This is Andrew Breitbart filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 800-449-8255 and, of course, go to michaelsavage.com. That was Nancy Pelosi. That's the most disingenuous, disingenuine expression of you know, that somehow that Tea Party group there, not all people are guilty of throwing out the N-word, just some. And she does not want to impugn the motivation or the character of the others because of this group of people that said the N-word. Let me repeat again. I will give $10,000 to the United Negro College Fund if John Lewis or anyone is able to show me any evidence with all those handy cams, with all those flip phones, that the N-word was used once. She knows that this was a staged event. She knows that everything that was done that day was staged because they knew there were going to be 30 to 40,000 people outside of the Capitol. And so what they did was, Nancy Pelosi, you did this, you Caucasian American scoundrel. You used the black people to walk through the audience to make it look like Selma 1964. You want to split this country on race, and you were willing to put them into harm's way. Because quite frankly, they were taunting the audience. They were looking at them in an offensive way. They were walking around like as if they were doing something that was dangerous. There was nothing dangerous about walking through the Tea Party movement. In 14 months, the Tea Party movement has been nothing but peaceful. It has been nothing but inclusive. I can't tell you how many wonderful black Americans I have met at tea parties and I've become friends with, and friended on Facebook, and friended on Twitter. And they are sick and tired of how the Democratic Party uses them and abuses them and promises them the world and gives them nothing. And this is offensive. And this has to stop. And this means that we have to stand up to this incessant barrage of political correctness. They are taunting us to respond. And we have to respond. We can't not allow for false accusations to stand. Because as she stands there, acting as if she's trying to be reasonable, saying that not all people are guilty, she is dictating the terms of the cable news and the mainstream media engagement. And I had to go on the Dylan Radigan show on MSNBC. I prefer not to go on MSNBC. No right-thinking American would want to have to go out in the middle of their day and go out on MSNBC, okay? But I did, because Nancy Pelosi and Sheila Jackson Lee and James Clyburn and John Lewis decided to go out on a fishing expedition. They came up with Bupkis, and now they're out there falsely claiming that racism is a central defining factor of the Tea Party movement. This is what we reported at Big Government a few months ago after the Tea Party convention in Nashville. Bill Clinton and James Carville put together a meeting trying to figure out, what are we going to do about this Tea Party? What are we going to do about this Tea Party? Well, this is it. This is their plan. The day after their bill passes, they realize that there's a chance of it may be repealed. They know there's going to probably be a slaughter come November, because they had to twist so many arms of Democrats who knew that this was going to be their death wish. And so they had to come up with a counterattack, and this was it. It started on Saturday with the Congressional Black Caucus walking through that crowd with handy cams in their over their head, trying to fish for some racism. They didn't get it, yet they accused the group of it. Nancy Pelosi went along with it. Everyone went along with it. Let's play Sheila Jackson Lee trying to stoke the flames of outrage within the African-American community, who I guarantee you is not going to be going on Big Journalism or BigGovernment.com to find out whether or not the N-word was hurled 15 times. She's stoking the flames. Sheila Jackson Lee.
Over the last 2 days, human beings who happen to be members of Congress have been called the N-word, have been spat on. Just recently, someone asked me why my braids were so tight.
There you go. That is the Democratic Party in 2010. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here's the song this about the bill. The first beneficiaries will be the Tea Partiers. I met Tea Partiers yesterday, some who were in their fear, some in their anger, some hurling invectives, have a Medicaid card. They have Social Security. They have Medicare. And they were howling against big government as if they'd been programmed to react without thinking that they would be the first beneficiaries.
Programmed without thinking. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255. And, of course, visit michaelsavage.com. What an appropriate and wonderful guest we have here to answer to this malarkey that we've been talking about, the race baiting, the race, the racial stoking that occurred this weekend, the planned attempt to try and divide this country by race on an issue that has to do with health care, not race. We have the Honorable Retired Colonel Alan West, who's running for Congress in Florida's 22nd District. I almost would move there to vote for you, Colonel West. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, Andrew, and it's great to hear from you, and greetings to the Savage Nation and the listening audience.
Colonel West, I want to speak as frankly as humanly possible on a subject that is very difficult to talk about in a politically correct nation, in a politically correct media, and that is race in America. You are a conservative black American, and I, at tea parties, I always see black Americans. They come up to me, and I don't want to feel like it's, you know, it means much to me. I don't think it's racial or racist of me to see the courage in the eyes of black Americans who are willing to go against the threat of being called an old, deeply offensive language that the Democratic Party employs, that the liberal blacks employ as a means to intimidate people. So when I see black Americans who step out and bravely come out to support liberty, it is an especially heartwarming thing for me. And so is it the wrong sentiment that I desperately want this country to elect people like you to change the course of what the media and the left have been able to do for the last 40 years and divide this country by race?
Yeah, well, one of the key things you have to look at, Andrew, is that the left is very concerned about maintaining this 21st century battlefield. They can't afford to lose this huge electorate block that they have in the black community. So, and you have the race-baiting proprietors of poverty, such as Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and others, who also don't want to see more and more people escape from that plantation, whereby they lose power. So what you have an attempt right here is to delegitimize, is to marginalize and attack and suppress the free speech of a grassroots movement through this intimidation tactic by using the race card. And really it's getting to the point where when you use that word race or racist or racism, it means less and less. And, you know, one thing I have to tell you, I was born and raised in the inner city of Atlanta, Georgia, same neighborhood where Dr. King was born and raised. And my elementary school was right across the street from Ebenezer Baptist Church. So growing up as a young man, walking to school, walking after school down to the Butler Street YMCA, I went down Auburn Avenue, and that was the cradle of black history when it comes to the civil rights. And Dr. King did not preach a message about victimization or about dependency or about using your skin color as a crutch. He focused on the character, and that's what he wants people to focus on today. I mean, that would be his message. So the thing is, if people are trying to use race as a means to intimidate and suppress other people's free speech and an ability to redress their government, that is so anti-American, and it's the antithesis of who we are as American people.
Well, it's not just the cry of racist that they've tried to do to intimidate people, and it's not just the intimidation of black Americans telling them, you know, it seems that the entire strategy, the entire Alinsky strategy of impugning the character of the Tea Party movement, whether calling it violent, trying to say that it's, you know, directed by people who have a fringe concept of what this nation is about, when it's about the original documents. It seems that they're very fearful that this movement is going to grow. And so they're telling people who are sitting inside of their houses watching the country change, and they believe quite radically, that what if those people sitting there watching on TV decide, you know what, I'm going to step outside too. And it seems to me that it's a means of intimidating people because they're fearful that this group of early adopters, which is hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, will become tens of millions before we know it.
You're absolutely correct. And when you go back, I think it's rule number 8 of Saul Alinsky, where it talks about isolating a target, you know, freezing it and attacking it. And that's exactly what they're attempting to do. But, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, it wasn't too long ago when Harry Reid, we know about his comments addressing the president as a light-skinned, non-Negro dialect-speaking black man. But, you know, coming from the left, it was acceptable because he was a person that said those things because he liked the president, and the president gave him a get-out-of-jail-free card pass. So the double standard and the duplicitous nature of the left is absolutely insidious. See, they only try to use this thing, race, as a means by as a weapon for their ends, but they don't see it just the same as when they came out and attacked Condoleezza Rice with the birthing tubes, when they attacked Michael Steele back when he was running for Senate in the state of Maryland, and, you know, drew him with the Uncle Tom face with the big lips and the white gloves. For them, that's totally acceptable because they don't want to see the opposition voices in the black community that believe in the principles and values of this country, being at the Declaration, the Founding Fathers with the Constitution, with the Fellows Papers, those things that are inherent to who we are, they stand against that, and they seek to squash any voice. So what you really have going on is them showing their absolute fear of losing control and using this tactic to, once again, as I said, to try to suppress people. And it really is a dishonest tyranny on the side of the left, especially when you think about, you know, when you have these fringe left groups, the Code Pinks that get out and do what they do, the anarchist groups that get out and do what they do, the fact that, you know, President Bush was constantly derided and attacked. The last president we had that was shot was a Republican president. So if you want to talk about violence, if you want to talk about vile hatred and vicious attacks, that's the tactic of the tyranny of the left. And all of a sudden, when people start to stand up and speak out against their policies, which are very, very socialist in nature, there's no doubt about that, they try to turn that on us, the American people, and this, you know, sincere grassroots movement. Now, if there are racial epithets being thrown, I don't agree with them. I don't condone them. But I got to tell you something. There's a hypocrisy in what the left is doing.
Well, the hypocrisy couldn't be greater. You just mentioned Colonel West about Harry Reid talking about Obama having, you know, lights. He's a light-skinned Negro, and his dialect, I mean, seems pretty patronizing at best. Not necessarily an attack on Obama, but an attack on black people and what he perceives to be their default dialect. It seemed like a very blatant racist thing, but the most racist thing that came out of that recent book that had the Harry Reid revelation was the Bill Clinton revelation, which I thought was more blatantly racist. And it's, I believe that you can not only protect Bill Clinton by not holding him accountable, that they understood, the collective left understood that he was an Arkansas good old boy, and that they needed to craft a narrative of him being a different good type. I mean, this is a guy who studied under or worked with Fulbright, you know, with William Fulbright, a person with a not particularly lovely racial history. So this guy being the governor of Arkansas and being a guy who worked under Fulbright is going to come into national politics as a Southerner. What they did was they granted him the protection of Toni Morrison, who said he's the first black president. And so that is all we know about Bill Clinton is, oh, he's so great for the black people because Toni Morrison said so. And then we find out in that book that recently came out that Bill Clinton went to the late Senator Ted Kennedy to try to get his vote for him to choose Hillary in the primaries over Barack Obama. And he said that, come on, this guy would be serving us coffee a few years ago. That to me was a blatantly racist statement, and he did not even have to be held to account for it because the media is in bed with the Democratic Party and protects the racism from within. And Michelle Obama, all she had to say to end any of this discussion was, well, it doesn't matter. They vote for the proper things. They're for social justice. They're for economic equality.
Well, the thing that you have to look at, the history of the Democrat Party, and it really boils down to four S's. The first one being slavery, then secession, being segregation. I mean, it's the party of the Jim Crow. It's the party of the Ku Klux Klan. It's the party of now in the 21st century of socialism. And you go back and you think about how people like Al Gore Sr. and Robert Byrd and their relations with white supremacist groups and how they blocked the civil rights legislation of the 60s. And, you know, they're just showing their true colors of who they are. But see, the thing is, the reason why the liberal left gets a pass from the media and, of course, from the black community because of this thing about social and economic justice, because of the fact that they allow, and it's very dishonest what they do, Andrew, in that they look at the black community and say that you don't have an opportunity to achieve as we can achieve. Therefore, you know, we have to have these programs that give you just enough to get by on. See, the difference between a conservative and a liberal is this. A conservative believes that every person in the United States of America has the opportunity to have a ladder, and they can climb and they can achieve and they can be truly, as we say in the military, all you can be. But we give them a safety net because sometimes you may slip off of that ladder, but you got to get right back up and climb again. But a liberal believes that you just give a person a hammock and they just sit up and they continue to get the free programs that the nanny state provides to them so that they are seen as inferior, they are kept down, and it really is the true racist in nature. that you believe that a certain group of people cannot achieve what you can achieve. So, you know, but the media is going to give them a pass because they're in love with the liberal left. But I think that right now we're going to see a change in that, and that is what's scaring them more than anything else. And that is what makes a person like me so dangerous to them. Having come out of the inner city and having done well myself, and, you know, when I have a wife with an MBA and a PhD and she's doing well also, that they can't afford to have a successful. And that's why I know that they're going to continue to attack me and our campaign down here in Congressional District 22.
Colonel Alan West, I want everybody to go to alanwestforcongress.com. The strongest way that we can send a message to Nancy Pelosi and Sheila Jackson Lee and John Lewis and the rest of these race-baiting Democrats who are trying to divide this country on race is to elect black conservatives, Hispanic conservatives, Japanese-American conservatives. We need to go at them at their own game. Alan West knows more about this subject and knows more about what the essence and the core of what this country is than 99.9% of this country. He has lived the American dream, and only in the face of a black American who understands what this country has gone through can we as a country continue to progress. Thank you very much, Alan West, Colonel Alan West. AlanWestForCongress.com. Please donate to his campaign today. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255. I want to take your calls right now. We've got on Don from Indiana. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I hear you were at the Tea Party event at the Capitol on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday. The incident they're saying happened between like 2 and 2:30, or 2:30 and 3, but. Mm-hmm. We were right there, and there was nothing that really went down. And also, they had Barney Frank walking up and down that little path, and they had Jesse Jackson standing over the little pit area next to the building where they took the vote.
Isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious that this was that this is the strategy to try and put out the people that the Tea Party people find the most offensive, the ones that are the most defiant against them, the ones that attack them mercilessly, you know, as a means to fundraise, who knows, in order to get the SEIU so revved up that they're going to go down and, you know, beat people up at rallies. You know, these are the people, the Barney Franks of the world, were very instrumental in creating the housing crisis. These Tea Partiers know what is going on, so that they knew that Nancy Pelosi going into that audience and the Congressional Black Caucus taunting, acting as a core group of black people. Why would they act as a bloc? First of all, call me crazy, but there shouldn't be a Congressional Black Caucus. This is America, e pluribus unum. That we allowed for them to separate themselves the way that we allowed for college campuses to separate the humanities departments into, you know, African American studies and Latino studies. This separating of us is going to be the demise of the United States. So you were there. You saw all of these characters, we'll call them. I'll be polite. And did it seem to me, to you, Don, that these people were trying to bait the audience to get a reaction?
Yeah, and then what's curious, they were almost walking in such a leisurely manner, like a Sunday walk, you know, taking as much time as humanly possible to go maybe a block down the road. And then Sheila...
Jackson Lee.
Yeah, she came out onto the balcony that overlooks the... there's like a little plot of grass where they put the Tea Party people. And she's on the balcony just looking down at everybody, and she gives us the peace sign.
I talked to somebody in Congress who was out there on the balcony at the same time, and it wasn't the peace sign, it was the victory sign, according to Sheila Jackson Lee. So if you start thinking about it, and if you start looking at all the cameras, and you start looking at who was walking around, and how Nancy Pelosi this week has treated this, and how cable news has treated this, nothing happens by coincidence with the Democratic Party and the media. I call it the Democrat media complex for a reason. When you start seeing a lot of things happening that rhyme with each other, that look like each other, it's because they're all on the same page. They're on the same talking points. And so on Saturday and Sunday, to have all of these faux incidents, none of which are ever accounted for, to become the starting point of the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday news cycle, you have the Democratic strategy, which is to put the Tea Party movement on the defensive, because the Tea Party movement was an act of offense against tyranny. And so they're trying to put it on the defense, and they're trying to use race baiting, and they're trying to goad people to do the wrong thing. We've got Manny on the line from San Diego.
I saw that wretched display by the Democratic leadership, and as a minority, I fully understood the imagery that they were trying to evoke.
How dare you, Manny, call this phone, this show. Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to evoke the racist American. Thank you very much for standing up for this country, Manny. You are an American as much as anyone else is. Thank you for calling into the Savage Nation. This is Andrew Breitbart.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 800-449-8255 and go to michaelsavage.com to buy all of your Christmas goodies early this year. Anyway, this is Andrew Breitbart. The last hour we were talking about the Democratic Party's new strategy. Now that they shoved health care down our throats, what's next up for the Democratic Party? Oh, that's right. The American people are not happy with them. They did not want that health care reform. And the Tea Party movement was at the forefront of exposing the raw corruption that was behind all of the deals, all the scams that were put together, all the last second bribes that were done. The Tea Party was on it. They were doing what citizens of this country were supposed to do. And the Democratic Party has devised a strategy that started Saturday in front of the Capitol of trying to taunt the Tea Party people, to try and get them to do something, to whether it be an act of violence, whether it be to throw out a slur. And the Tea Party movement is a sophisticated group of cats, and those people did not take the bait. So the Democratic Party has created a campaign of simply lying through their teeth that the N-word was said 15 times as the Congressional Black Caucus walked through that crowd and was received quite peacefully, except for hearing, kill the bill, kill the bill. That's what they were there for, to kill the bill. There was not a racial component to this. And Nancy Pelosi and Sheila Jackson Lee, the Congressional Black Caucus, they're all out there trying to marginalize the Tea Party because they know that the juggernaut, that the train has left the station, and it and destination is November 2010. And these people need to stop the growth of the Tea Party movement. And they need to bring the mainstream media in on this action. And that's why they did it. That's why they staged the very symbolic walk through the crowd, because they knew come Monday, come Tuesday, come Wednesday on MSNBC and on CNN, on this week on Sunday, that would be the talk, because nobody would have the guts to challenge the false accusation. Well, I'm going to teach you over the next half hour about what you have to do when the mainstream media is aimed against you. This is how you win a media battle. This is what I do for a living. I don't know how to add. I don't know how to subtract. I don't know how to do long division. I can't do trigonometry, but I do know how to play with the media, and I know how to win, and I'm going to teach you how it's done. Today I did something that everybody would recommend that I, a good conservative, not do. I went on the Dylan Radigan show on MSNBC to talk about this issue. To conservatives, it's a no-win situation. You don't want to have to defend the accusations of racism, because if you say they didn't happen, you're mitigating. They're going to put you up against the wall. So you're going to look like you're defensive. You're going to look like you're a racist. That's what the intention is. But I went on today. Here's a little bit of Andrew Breitbart with Dylan Radigan this afternoon.
It is finally a checks and balance against a Republican Party of people who get elected and go to Washington and who become part of this stinking process.
I could not agree more. I mean, again, that my greatest concern is the lack of an opposition party to actually call out either party for its accommodation for the corporatist interests that have taken over our country.
I went on the show today, even though the last time I was on, it was with David Schuster during that false Watergate Jr. Era, when they were falsely accusing James O'Keefe of wiretapping a senator's office. And I went back there to push back and tell him James O'Keefe did no such thing, and that you have falsely slandered him as wiretapping. You falsely, said that he's guilty. And I forced a retraction from David Schuster, and I was in what I would describe as war mode. When James O'Keefe and Hannah Giles came to me in September, we basically huddled together and recognized that in order for us to get the mainstream media to see the Acorn story, we had to act in an aggressive manner and to force them to cover it. And we knew that the left would actively try to kill us, to kill the messenger, the way they're trying to kill the messenger on the Tea Party thing, because they don't want there to be more Hannah, James, and Andrew Breitbart's out there. They don't want whistleblowers who are going to blow the whistle on government corruption. So we put on war paint. That's the mode that we were in. Our heartbeats were like we were in combat. I talked to a few people who were in combat, and I said, wow, it's strange. I'm having trouble sleeping. My adrenaline is always at 110%. Last week when Acorn announced that it was going bankrupt, I made a conscious decision that I'm moving into this next era with a less combative mindset. Why is that? Because it worked. What we had to do, we did. We fought Acorn. We fought the mainstream media. They lied. We told the truth. And now the American people can see. And Acorn is now forced into disillusion. I mean, into bankruptcy, into trying to scurry, to brand itself under different names in order to do what it's going to, do what Acorn is going to do. But now that we move on to the next chapter, I hope that everybody out there understands that it was the right thing to do to put war paint on. It was the right thing to do to defend ourselves every step of the way. They tried to call us liars. We stood up for ourselves. They tried to call us racist. We stood up for ourselves. We did what Sarah Palin does. She stands up for herself. That's what you need to do, whether you're on a college campus and they're intimidating you with their political correctness, whether you're in a corporate environment, whether you are in the media or in politics. The lessons that can be learned in 2010 is the only way that you will be defeated by the political correctness, by the Alinsky, by the critical theory, by the intimidation, and the community organizing, is to stand up to it. These are bullies, and if you punch the bully back, you're going to win. We showed that it can be done. The next chapter is HUD. James O'Keefe walked into multiple offices of housing and urban development and posed a fraudulent scheme in which he and his buddy were going to try and get $8,000 in free money from the government, basically, that they didn't deserve based upon a stimulus-based first-time homeowner rebate deal. And he was successful in every single office. Now that the mainstream media tried to destroy Hannah, James, and me, and we are standing, we are now about a million times more famous than we were 7 months ago. We cannot be ignored by the mainstream media. We are a force to be reckoned with. Does that remind you of anyone else? Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin was unknown to the American people until, I believe, August of 2008, when John McCain picked her, and they tried to destroy her, yet she refused to be destroyed. And now, today she created a deal with, I think, the TLC channel for a reality show. She can do anything she wants. I'm going to be introducing her tomorrow in Searchlight, Nevada, for the Tea Party movement. She's a one who stood up to the bullies. When you stand up to the bullies, you win. And right now, I'm changing the chapter. I've taken the war paint off, and I walked through the front door of a major network, a network that had rejected the Acorn tapes for political purposes. And now they're going to put the HUD tapes up there. You're going to see this corruption. You're going to smell this corruption. And this corruption is going to be part of the narrative of Acorn, and it's going to be part of the narrative of the health care reform bill, because the same bureaucrats that would take billions of dollars and help two kids off of the street who want to defraud the government of $8,000 per house are the same people who are going to be looking into your health history. They're going to be deciding whether or not you get a surgery, whether you get medication. The same bureaucrats are going to be taking money under the table. This government bureaucracy, in the least, needs to have the checks and balance of the mainstream media. And when you walk to them and you tell them, look at this corruption, they ignore it. But because James, Hannah, and I stood up to these people, they understood that they were going to have to reckon with it at one time or another. Why not embrace it now? That is exactly what is happening right now, and that is exactly why I went on the Dylan Radigan show, and I recommend everybody else stand up for what you believe in. If you see corruption anywhere in your life, you've got a handy cam, you have the means to collect information. You are a researcher. You are a journalist. The internet now provides you the ability to disseminate this information, and you can stand up to these bullies. And if you could walk straight into your local news station and deliver the goods to them. And if they say no, you can go put that on the internet, and that's your lead, that your local affiliate chose not to expose this type of stuff. You are now an investigative reporter, and you now can hold the American people. You can show the American people the corruption that they've long refused to show. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for the Michael Savage Show. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage. If
MSNBC is willing to sign the same provision where race baiting and race are taken out of issues that have nothing to do with race, I will get the Tea Party to sign it. You get MSNBC and NBC to sign it. We'll be golden.
I got it. So listen, I don't speak for MSNBC. I'm a new guy here. I've only been here for 9 months. And so I only speak for the hour between 4 and 5. And I can assure you, I already am on an anti-racist crusade, have been since I showed up. So I can guarantee you, you have that from me. I can't speak to what the balance of this network will do anymore than you can speak to what the Tea Party will do. But
that's
right. But let me finish. But what I can do is say, regardless of what anybody does, I am anti-racist on a crusade, and I am the leader of this TV show. If you call yourself a Tea Party leader, regardless of what MSNBC does, CNN does, Fox does, the Democrats do, the Republicans do, the Elks Club, the PTA, or anybody else, anybody that would choose could easily get out from under the accusations of being a racist by merely coming out on an anti-racist crusade, and you and I both know that.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 800-449-8255. That was me this afternoon on MSNBC, a place where I rarely dare to go. That was the second time I've been on MSNBC. The first time, I believe, David Schuster got banned from Twitter after that experience, and he had to retract some lies that he'd propagated there. So I kind of only go in there for surgical sorties where I can take out a reporter. But today I didn't really come in expecting warfare per se, other than that I would have to challenge the mainstream media's take on what happened this weekend and the Democratic Party's attempt to frame the Tea Party movement as racist as a means to marginalize it as it continues to gather steam going into the 2010 election cycle. And Dylan Radigan was, for the most part, very respectful to me, but his one trick up his sleeve was, even though we both recognize that there was no proof that the Tea Party movement has ever done anything, even individuals within the Tea Party movement have ever done anything racist, he says, well, why don't you get the Tea Party movement to sign a proclamation or to make a statement saying that it's an anti-racist statement? And I said to him, I go, look, first of all, the Tea Party movement is like a herd of cats. Conservatives don't congregate like lefties do typically. You can't get the Tea Party movement to congregate in one place. It's just a bunch of citizens who get together. So you can't make that accommodation even if you wanted to. And you're basically in the position of trying to disprove a negative. So what I did with Dylan Radigan, realizing I couldn't make that, I could not accept on behalf of the Tea Party something that it's never even, officially been shown to be racist in any possible way. I said, look, Dylan, you know, maybe I would try and put a coalition together of Tea Parties if we could do it with MSNBC, because MSNBC has been at the forefront of race baiting on the Tea Party movement. It was MSNBC, that actually took a picture of a man cut off his head and asked the question. He was wearing a gun and a strap around his body at an Obama rally, and they asked the question, are these anti-Obama rallies racist? Well, MSNBC cut the guy's head off because the guy was black. And so MSNBC, with its Janine Garofalo going on there and saying that the Tea Party movement is the quintessence of racism without any evidence, they've been at the forefront of racism, calling people racist, including black Americans who go to the Tea Party rallies, including Hispanic Americans, including an enormous amount of people who have served in the United States military. We are turning the tables back on them. That is how you win. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1 800 888-449-8255, and visit michaelsavage.com. The media works in mysterious ways, and we are all media magicians in 2010. We all have the ability to get on the internet and within 5 minutes change the narrative. That is what the mainstream media is starting to figure out very, very late into the internet game. And so with the Democratic Party trying to change the narrative from the Tea Party successes, the Tea Party growth, the inevitable slaughter come the elections in November 2010, as the Tea Party is destined to gain new membership because of the Democratic Party's desire to shove down our throats the supposed health care, they call it health care reform, but it is in essence the socialization of the American health care industry. They understand that the American people did not want it. They understand that this was the definition of a partisan bill. They understand that even the partisans had to be bribed. So they had to turn it on the Tea Partiers. They had to accuse them of being racist. And that strange beast that is the media can be manipulated. And because of their desire to create racism from whole cloth where it doesn't exist, they have granted me this opportunity today to throw it back at them. We have a very special guest on the line, a person who has been maligned publicly by Media Matters for America and Eric Bollert, a George Soros-funded, John Podesta-led, nihilistic, hideous organization. These people, last August, at the Russ Carnahan Healthcare Town Hall, were there at the exact moment that Kenneth Gladney, a 130-pound black man who is in remission from leukemia and who has diabetes, who is handing out Don't Tread on Me flags. This was the day that the unions and SEIU came down to the healthcare protest to stop the dissent. This is the day that the White House sent out the message, if they punch you, punch back twice as hard. And the one person that was punched that I know of in St. Louis was a black gentleman by the name of Kenneth Gladney. And what the media did was they tried to shut this thing up. And at the forefront was this nefarious, nasty group led by John Podesta, basically the architect of the far left that nobody pays attention to, and paid for by George Soros, this disgusting funder of the far left. And they were there to muddy the waters, to make it appear, well, to just create confusion, to just use Alinsky rules to mock this person, to not give him his moment of justice in America, because they wanted to get the health care bill done. And they ignored Kenneth Gladney, and they ignored Kenneth Gladney. And Sheila Jackson Lee didn't say word one about Kenneth Gladney. And the Congressional Black Caucus did not stand up for him. And the NAACP did not stand up for him. And the Southern Poverty Law Center did not stand up for him. So we came to Kenneth Gladney, and we said, we'll stand up for you. Let's get your story out there. Media Matters mocked us for drawing attention to Kenneth Gladney, a 130-pound guy who was simply at a town hall event handing out Don't Tread on Me flags. When two SEIU guys walked up to him, one called him the N-word. The incident was caught. The aftermath of the incident was caught on tape. There were eyewitness accounts. We have a police report at biggovernment.com, and you can see quite clearly what happened. They wanted to intimidate him. The N-word was thrown. Violence was used. And where is the mainstream media? Where is MSNBC? Where are town halls? Talking, why is there no mainstream media talking about Kenneth Gladney? because he was on the side of the Tea Partiers. Welcome to the show, Kenneth Gladney.
Thank you very much, Mr. Breitbart. I'm glad to talk with you today. Thank you very much.
Ken, you have had probably the most harrowing 9 months of anyone that I know. We talk to each other at regular clips, and not only have you suffered because you decided to stand up for yourself for what happened to you, but your brother Keith lost his job on Christmas Eve. The St. Louis Democratic Party, which lawyered up the SEIU thugs that beat you up, the entire city, the entire Democratic apparatus of this town has decided to ruin your and your brother's lives. What does it feel like to have watched what has happened over the last few days as fake accusations of the N-word being hurled at the town, at the Capitol, are being met with a media that ignored your pleas for help?
Well, I can honestly tell you that, it doesn't make me feel good at all. I mean, I've had a lot of trials and tribulations and stuff these past few months. I've been dealing with a lot of things, but it's kind of hard to suck, you know, just to swallow down that, you know, no one cares. Seems like, you know, no one's, you know, interested in you know, freedom of speech or anything like that. It just seemed like things, you know, they want everything to go away. But, you know, if this was anyone of any higher power, you best believe that they will be on top of it 199.9%. They would be on top of this. But right now, you know, it's like I'm just something that they threw under the rug, and I'm trying my best to hold on and keep my family, up on everything, and I'm trying to maintain, you know. Like I said, right now I'm having a bad time with my health because I have two herniated discs that has to be addressed here really soon.
Were those herniated discs as a result of what happened to you?
Well, it's from blunt. They say it's from blunt trauma. So, you know, I haven't had anything happen to me since August the 6th.
Can you remind me what happened? Can you remind the audience what happened to you on August the 6th at the Russ Carnahan Healthcare Town Hall?
Yes. it was about 7:30, around between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, somewhere around there. And they were holding the meeting for the healthcare there, and Russ Carnahan was a speaker. And, you know, I just thought maybe I could get out there and hand out some flags and, you know, things like that, you know, trying to do something good and trying to take care of my family as well, you know, because I have been unemployed, you know, due to the recession. Well, you know, I heard people coming out of the building, but, you know, I was standing there talking to the pastor's wife, this pastor, and she was interested in the flag, and I was giving her just a brief summary about, you know, what the flag means, the old Navy flag and things like that. Well, one of the SEIU union members, I think he's a director or something like that, if I'm not mistaken, he walked up to me and he started just, you know, cursing me out and asking, what is this I'm selling? I said, this is the Don't Tread on Me flag. It's a Navy flag, and everybody can identify with it. You don't have to be a Democrat or a Republican or independent or, you know, liberal or anything like that. Everybody in the world can identify with Don't Tread on Me. And I, you know, after he said that, I just looked at him, and he snatched my flags from me.
Was this the Reverend Elston McCowan?
Yes, that's him. And
of the SEIU.
Of the SEIU.
And the SEIU, for the audience that is not aware of this, gave hundreds of millions of dollars to get Barack Obama elected, and Andy Stern, the head of SEIU, has been the most vocal about his disappointment that healthcare took so long to get down. This was what they needed to get done. So they acted like a thug army and sent them down to intimidate protesters to the point where the good Reverend Elston McCowan from the SEIU called you the N-word, and he's over 6 feet tall. He's over 200 pounds. I believe he's over 220 pounds, as was his cohort. There were two 220-pound, 6-foot-tall-plus men who beat the crap out of you, and the mainstream media ignored it, even though there was video of it.
Yeah, every one of them, last one of them was arrested and everything, and it just seemed like, you know, they didn't care. No one come to talk to me. No one, really cared about how I was doing or how, you know, how everything was going. And like I said, you know, those guys were like, they were really, really big guys, you know, and there was
you weigh 130 pounds. Is that correct?
Well, now I picked up a little weight, but yeah, at that time I weighed 130.
And you're recovering from leukemia and you have diabetes.
Yes, I do.
And didn't the left and Media Matters do everything they could to muddy the waters, to portray it that you were the instigator of this attack?
Yeah, they tried to make it like I did something wrong, and I'm like, well, what did I do by just trying to offer him a flag? I mean, if that's really doing something wrong, then I guess everybody in America has a problem then. if they're going to get beat up for offering somebody something.
The other gentleman who beat you up, I just want the world to know his name. What was his name? Perry Mullen. I can tell you who called you the N-word. John Lewis cannot tell you who spoke the N-word in front of 40,000 people and about 40,000 cameras that were all up in the air trying to tape that moment. Yet, Media Matters for America and John Podesta and the far left want to impugn the millions of people in America for being racist, for being associated with the Tea Party movement, and the mainstream media is going along with it, yet they ignored you, Kenneth Gladney. What can we do to help you, Kenneth? Is there any place where people can send some money? Nobody has helped you. It is driving me crazy that the left can create a charity overnight over a false victim, and next thing you know, they've raised $1 million, and you don't have anything right now. And your brother, he had his job taken away on Christmas Eve because we forced a prosecution by publicly putting out there the police report and using the media that we're able to do out there on the internet. We were able to draw attention to the prosecutors, and I believe your brother's firing was the corrupt city of St. Louis's way of saying, this is what happens when you mess with us. What can we do to help you?
Well, Mr. Breitbart, I want to tell you, and I want the whole audience to know that it's with me, it's not about money, but you know, I am in dire need of help because you know, I have to have surgery and stuff, and my wife can't afford it. I can't afford it. You know, I have past medical bills from this incident that I haven't paid because of you know, I lack of any type of funds or anything, and you know, it's hard to.
If anybody wants to help Kenneth Gladney, email me. My email is andrew@breitbart.com. It's that easy. If anybody in the St. Louis area or in the Missouri area that could potentially help Keith or Kenneth Gladney with their current burden right now, much of it created because of the indifference of the media as Kenneth Gladney was beaten and called the N-word for standing up for his American right to congregate and protest, to hand out flags. He was beaten by SEIU and nobody cared. And his life has gone downhill, and his brother lost his job, and he's got some medical problems. I want you to help this guy. I don't ask for that much, but this is just unfair, especially with the galling behavior that we're seeing at the Democratic Party right now, trying to create a race incident where there's not a single N-word. This black man was beaten in public with videotapes rolling, and nobody stood up for him. These people don't care about civil rights, because if you don't stand up for Kenneth Gladney, you don't care about anyone's civil rights. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255 and go to michaelsavage.com. We have Teresa from Virginia. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm calling to make your evening. I turned you on this evening, and you made your comments about Representative Lewis, who I've seen all over the news. I said a little prayer, and I thought, I can get through. I know I can get through to his office. So I got through to his office, and I said, where's your proof? Where's your proof? I said, listen, the N-word is a horrible word, but where is your proof that the Tea Partiers did this? Where is it? And he said to me, we don't have to give you proof. We don't have to give you any proof at all. And I said, listen, there were cameras everywhere. You know, and I know, there were cameras. The Tea Partiers had cameras. You had network cameras. Your people had cameras. You would be able to catch this on a camera. And he said, I'm telling you, we don't have to give proof. And I said, my husband's Justice Department, and I'm telling you, we're talking libel here. And he said, oh, okay. Well, he never heard the word. And I said, really? He never heard the word. He didn't hear it 15 times? He said, no. I said, well, then who did hear it, and who was it? And he said, well, it was somebody else who heard it. And I said, well, tell me who it was. I want to know who it was. And he said to me, I don't know who it was. He said, and we want this to just go away. He said, this is some reporter that's just blobbing his mouth all over the network news, and this has to go away. And I said to him, listen, I know what threats are. I said, we, with my husband having justice, we've been sued, we've been threatened. My family were the ruling family of Poland before communists came in. I know what threats are. There's been rape and murder. I know what threats are. And he said to me, and I said, and it's horrible to be called a terrible word. He said, well, you don't know what's happened on our phone. We've gotten some calls on our phone. And I said, well, so has everybody who's ever stood up for anything. And I said, so you're saying that he didn't hear it? He said, no, he did not.
Now, well, all I can say is that it's as obvious as day. I offered $10,000 for any evidence, and my email and my phone line have been silent all day. This was a staged maligning, a staged slandering and libeling. It's been in print. It's been everywhere. I guarantee you that if there was a one N-word caught on tape, that we would have a Rodney King-like repetition of its played on media over and over and over. And it doesn't matter who the person is, because the person could have been a plant. I mean, these people are very sophisticated people. They know and understand how J. Edgar Hoover would plant people into anti-war rallies. These people are playing a very slick game, but our game is slicker. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255. Also go to michaelsavage.com. You're listening to A Happy Warrior, Andrew Breitbart of Breitbart.com, Breitbart.tv. Big government, big journalism, and big Hollywood. I am a happy warrior because I have been coached by the best. Adam Baldwin is on the line. He is an actor that you all know of. He co-stars on the NBC show Chuck. I highly recommend that you watch this show. My son is addicted to the show and is very upset that Adam Baldwin's character is no longer in spy mode. But we shall see where that storyline takes us. He's also, you've seen him in Independence Day. He was the bodyguard in My Bodyguard. He's been in everything. Firefly, Serenity. What else? What else am I missing? Kubrick's. Adam, are you on the line?
Right here.
Full Metal Jacket.
That's it.
Man, how can you be in so many things? You are the person who, when I met you, you taught me as if you were my Stella Adler of cable news to be the happy warrior. And today I went on cable news and I took off my scowl and I played the role of the happy warrior.
I think that's always most effective because you're never going to reach the 20% who are retrenched, entrenched, that will never listen. But you have an opportunity to reach those who are still either on the fence or who are simply remain open-minded. So you can do that better with a smile than a scowl.
I like to scowl every now and then, and I scowled during the Acorn story because it was such a frustrating battle to find that the mainstream media, everybody tells me not to call it the mainstream media, but they know what I'm talking about, it's sarcasm, that the mainstream media refused to cover it. They did not want the American people to see the corruption at Acorn, and they decided they were going to go after Hannah, James, and me, so I put on war paint. I put on war paint with Hannah, James, and me, we went in for the battle. But, you know, Eric Holder chose not to investigate Acorn, but quite frankly, the market worked and they just shut up their shop. And I think it's the end of a chapter. Acorn is basically diminished and we have more battles to fight out there. And I agree with you. I'm not going to treat every person in the media as if they're the enemy. If they want to report the truth, if they want to take the cries from the American people or their subscriptions being taken away or their viewership going over to Fox or to other more fair venues, you know, if they're willing to report the truth, we should be nice to them.
Well, and that's why I really appreciate your approach. You're able to jump in and out of character depending on the situation, but you also take the long view of a long cultural war that's been going on, and I think you've zeroed in on the main targets, and really just to open up the narrative and the discussion for people who either didn't have access to it, another extension of the leadership of a Rush Limbaugh or a Savage or any number of precursors to you. So you've targeted in on Hollywood, the culture, and government, and journalism, and it's great because it gives people an outlet, an alternative, and I think that this will just continue to grow. The accessibility is what's key. You want as much information as possible, and like you said, it's a market-driven, content-oriented medium that you're exploiting, and that for the good.
I don't like to complain so much about, you know, how oppressive it is out here for Hollywood conservatives because, quite frankly, I think conservatives have a lot to blame for not, you know, creating more conservative content. If they want to create conservative movies, they should create conservative film studios. So I don't like to complain so much, but it's hard not to go out there and use the media that I have to express to the American people that, yes, there are tons of Hollywood conservatives, and no, they cannot mostly be open about it because there are ramifications in their vocation. Don't you think in the last few years with big Hollywood and us talking about the subject matter that it has alleviated the burden a little bit?
Absolutely. I've been talking openly about conservative politics since at least 2001, 9/11, with my friends and colleagues. And the most important thing to remember is that if you don't play by the same rules as the angry liberals will, angry statists, leftists, whatever you want to call them, if you don't play by their rules and keep the emotion out of it as much as possible, especially in a working environment, then I think you can, over time, be more persuasive. So if you just argue the facts on the table, over time, your friends and colleagues will come to view the facts on the table as persuasive, whereas if you dig in your heels and start calling them names in return, which is, I think, what many conservatives, just out of sheer frustration, fell into that trap, because it's easy to fall into that emotional trap, especially in Hollywood when you have a lot of emotional folks who are in an emotional business, interpreting character and whatnot. When you get away from that and approach it strictly in a logical and a reason sense, you can win the day. These are lost art forms due to, I think, another one of your targets, education, big education coming up.
Well, what do you think, Adam, about what transpired this weekend and the Democrats' strategy to, now that they got the health care bill passed, to try and put the Tea Party movement on the defensive by accusing it of being crazy, racist, and violent, all that type of stuff? Do you think that that's going to be successful now that the new media has taught so many millions of people to fight back, and that's the only proper response?
No, I think it's an utter failure. I think that Alinsky Rule 13, pick the target, freeze it, polarize it, personalize it, doesn't work anymore, because those that are paying attention recognize it for what it is. Also, I just don't believe that those on the winning side, quote-unquote, as Obama once said, we won. If they've won, then why are they continuing to play the victim?
Well, they're the victim because they're the minority in this country, and the majority is very angry with them, and they're very fearful that this Tea Party express, as it were, is going to grow and grow and grow. And I really can't wait to show you the next HUD videos, Adam. You got to come by one of these days and check it out, because there is a continuum between what you see on the Acorn tapes and the HUD tapes, and the fact that the American people now are handing over to the same body of bureaucrats 6% of our economy in the form of health care. And it's easily the most precious part of the economy. This is our lives. This is our health. These are our private records. And so imagine what Alinsky types will do with, and isolate and freeze you. Look what they did to Joe Plumber when they went through his records to try and destroy him Alinsky style because he asked the wrong question.
Look what happened just today on the Home Affordable Modification Program under Obama's industry. It's a total failure. It's a disaster. People are getting thrown out of their houses. This was his program. This is the Democrats' program, and it's a failure. So the health care, if it continues underneath their oversight, is why wouldn't we think, based on their record, that the same doom will befall that industry as well?
Well, they need to make sure that the Tea Party movement does not grow. We are listening to Adam Baldwin from Chuck, NBC's Chuck. We're doing the Happy Warrior Jazz Ensemble here on the Savage Nation, and I want to bring him back afterwards to continue this medley. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255 and also go to michaelsavage.com. This is Andrew Breitbart of biggovernment.com. That's where the action is these days. I am big journalism, too. It's a checks and balance against the traditional media, and there's always a bevy of concerns that we go to war against them. If they tell a lie, we're there to nail them with Retracto, the correction alpaca. We're also on the air with a good friend of mine, Adam Baldwin. He's the co-star of my son's favorite show, Chuck. And like me, he's kind of one of these apostate Democrats, a guy who found in his 20s, I think. Were you in your 20s when you started to discover that you weren't the liberal you thought you were, or was it in your 30s?
About 28, I think. 27, 28 when I got married and started having kids.
Yeah, isn't it weird that way? What a cliche, but... So here's what I think it is, because you and I like just sitting for hours talking about that transformation, and we both, you know, read the books of David Horowitz, who had the same sort of apostasy, and we admire the transformations of Dennis Miller and David Mamet and Ron Silver, who started to see things. And it, when you start talking to people like us or starting to talk about, you know, it's these awakenings that we have these epiphanies of a stated value, a stated liberal ideal. And then you start seeing a series of contradictions that start amassing, that each one becomes the elephant in the middle of the room. For instance, Bill Clinton was for women's rights, and yet he was the biggest profligate womanizer of all time, and you know, was, you know, horrendous to you know, Paula Jones and to other people. Well, Clarence Thomas, a few years earlier, was accused of basically saying that there's a pubic hair on a Coke can. And you start seeing that there's a stated value, and then it is undermined over and over. And that is the trajectory of the apostate.
Well, I think one of the greatest things that turned me around is when I started seeing those moral busybodies trying to take care of me as opposed to allowing me to take care of myself and my own. Now, granted, I believe that there should be some sort of a social safety net, and Ray about that in his heyday was for the indigent, needy, rather than folks that don't really need the government dole out. Yes.
Like Charles Dickens-level indigent.
Yes, of course, the elderly indigent.
I think we lost Adam Baldwin. This is Andrew Breitbart. You're listening to the Savage Nation. Adam Baldwin, he does a lot of stuff out there that you wouldn't know that he does. You know, a lot of these Hollywood conservatives, you know, aren't hanging out at the politically correct charities. And I went down with the actress Christy Swanson and a friend of mine who goes by John David because he doesn't want to come out of the closet. We went down to Texas last year, about a year ago, this month actually, and participated in a charity called Road to Recovery. And it's a bunch of wounded warriors, guys who have lost their legs in Iraq and Afghanistan, guys who have hurt their backs, have been injured in ways that, you know, in previous eras, we couldn't put them back together. But now not only can we put the guys back together, we can put them on bicycles. And they rode about 100 miles a day for 5 days from San Antonio, Texas to Dallas. And I was only able to go for the last half of the last leg. I couldn't even handle it. But Adam Baldwin is in much better physical condition than I am, and he rode with these guys the entire time. And when our little contingency came in the last day, Adam took me aside, and he said, Andrew, I want you to know that we've created a cohesion in this unit. They're very committed to what they're doing, and let's not bring a new vibe. You know, it was one of the more impressive things I've ever seen. This guy really is not just a happy warrior, but he's an American patriot. He takes this stuff so unbelievably seriously, and he draws no attention to himself, that this is what motivates him, you know, on a daily basis. So I highly recommend you consume shows that star people who really do give back to the guys who fight for our freedom. So Adam Baldwin, are you back?
Yes, sir. Sorry about
that. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that you could get cut off, because there are good guys out here in Hollywood, and you're definitely one of them, and you don't ask for anybody to draw attention to it, so I'm glad you fell off.
Well, I appreciate those words about Ride to Recovery, because that's something that's very near and dear to my heart, and those are great guys, and I want to compliment you on just the way you fell in and took that advice and just were more of an observer than tried to in any way sort of take over and, hey, I'm Andrew and I'm here now, blah, blah, blah. You just wrote as best you can and joined in, and that was great.
Well, the thing is that these guys had a look on their eyes of, we have a mission to complete here, and the idea that Andrew Breitbart and his jovial merry pranksters could come in and say, hey, we're here to have a song and dance. And you're like, no, these guys are on the last part of their mission. And that's what these guys do. And after the election of last year, when I thought all, you know, hope was lost in this country, it seems to me that I wrote an article that's in the Washington Times. I said, we really need to take these guys, the General Petraeuses of the world, the guys who helped build Iraq up. These are the guys that we need to elect to office. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on the show, Adam Baldwin of Chuck. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for the Michael Savage Show. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Andrew Breitbart filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 1-800-449-8255 and go to michaelsavage.com to buy your favorite trinkets. We're going to take phone calls right now. We've got Kevin from Washington, D.C. You're on the Savage Nation.
Andrew, how are you?
Adequate to good.
Yes, this is one of your contributors, Kevin. I was at this whole thing.
Troublemaking, patriotic. You're a one man machine.
Well, that's my ex military service.
Have you been paying attention to my thesis on what has been transpiring the last few days? That this is a concerted effort to bait and goad the Tea Party movement to do something wrong, and when they couldn't find it, they're manufacturing it and using the mainstream media to play it up. Because they want to marginalize the Tea Party movement, because they're fearful that it could grow into November and be even more disastrous than it's going to be?
Exactly. Andrew, and just to show the hypocrisy of those on the left and these lawmakers, of course you remember they weren't very, very, how should I say, animated when people like Code Pink were protesting outside of Walter Reed Hospital or outside the funerals of military members killed in Iraq. No, they had nothing to say then. Or when the Students for a Democratic Society were throwing rocks through the window of recruiting stations at 12th and G Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Oh, no, we were told, oh, these are just an angry few. They have a right to be angry. But every night they were fanning the flames on MSNBC. Bush lied. We were lied into a war. This was a war of choice. And poor military recruiters had no ability to defend themselves. They were run off college campuses like in Berkeley, being chased off college campuses. But all of a sudden, a few lawmakers and a few nuts who on both sides basically come out, protest, and go over the edge, and now we're supposed to stop because the kingmakers are supposed to be protected, while the peons who actually defend for us, Andrew, are supposed to just basically stand there with their hands in their pocket. And this is a concerted effort. I watch people like Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow. They use video, but they don't put the audio in. Okay, like you said, $10,000, Andrew, I say double it to $50,000, because you know they're not going to be able to produce anything. And if they do produce anything, it's going to be a bait-and-switch job, just like the out there in Arizona, where they just, you know, edited the black guy out. Because, you know, of course, all African Americans think alike.
Isn't that the funniest part of it? Is that MSNBC gets caught editing out, cutting out a black guy's head, and they're out there trying to lecture us on race or race baiting and all that type of stuff. You know what's interesting? Because there is a video that shows the Black Congressional Caucus walking through the crowd, and at no point do you see one of their heads avert over to where, if you heard the N-word in a large crowd, which would be akin to screaming fire in a crowded theater, there's no ruckus that occurs. That's inconceivable that the Black Congressional Caucus, which is there holding their cameras up in the air, looking for the moment, that when the moment happened, and they said it happened 15 times, but if it even happened once, not a single head turns to create the confrontation with the person or persons that allegedly said it. I'm calling their bluff. They're liars. I think that it's the moment that the civil rights movement, the alleged civil rights movement that is led only by Democrats and the NAACP and the Southern Poverty Law Center, that movement has officially jumped the shark, and I no longer have to feel guilty when I don't describe Representative John Lewis as a distinguished person. He is now a liar in my book.
Andrew, you're so right. These guys manufactured this thing because, like I said, if it wasn't for sites like yours, Matt and the rest of them, we could talk about this. The citizen reporter is the individual that is keeping these politicians honest. We saw it with Dan Rather. He came out with these forged documents, tried to pass it off as fact, and in the end, it was a blogger who discovered that, these documents are fake. The media would have never reported it. Dan Rather has never even apologized for that whole episode. It is the citizen reporters, it is people like you and Matt and others who are basically out there, and Michael and all the others who are out there saying, okay, this is very disingenuous. This is a consorted effort, and this thing is the best way, and I can sum it up, is that Barack Obama, except for his skin color, brings nothing new to the presidency because these ideas have been tried before and they fail. And what they try to do is anyone who opposes these ideas or who have opposed them in the past, they run into a crowded theater and scream racism. Okay?
Well, he tries to act like he's benevolent, that he's a mollifying character. But the first thing that he did when he saw a potential racial incident, as opposed to acting as the mediator, he threw fuel on the fire with Sergeant Crowley, and he said that the police officer had behaved stupidly, and that blew up in his face. And I think that he has not been able to recover since then, and he's allowed for Nancy Pelosi pretty much to run the show. She's the one that's orchestrating this campaign down there, and he's doing nothing at all to try and bring this country together, which was about 70% of what the American people thought that hope and change meant.
What they say, when you have a dollar, all you do is end up with change. 1 cent is still change, but this is not change. This is nothing but the same tarred rhetoric that we've heard from the burned out 60 retreads. Oh, this is a right, that's a right, this is a right, that's a right. Okay, I have a right, okay? And the right is that you do not take my money and buy votes with it. And this is what this is. This is nothing more than a vote scam, buying scam for the midterm elections. We are taking from the producers of this country and give it to the non-producers. And basically what they say when the producers complain, oh, you're racist, you're sexist, you're homophobic. They come up with these nice, wonderful titles, okay? But when they sit in their own offices and things, they practice the same thing among themselves, because we remember what Joe Biden said about Barack Obama, but I guess the rest of the black community is...
Or Harry Reid or Bill Clinton. When you have the trifecta of those guys at the highest possible end of the Democratic Party on record, isolating Barack Obama for his race, the latent racism of the Democratic Party and the white Democratic Party rears its ugly head, and there the media is there to protect them every step of the way. Bill Clinton is guilty of telling Ted Kennedy that this guy would have been serving us coffee a few years ago. Yet a mass of Tea Partiers are now guilty because the mainstream media has gone along with a lie from Lewis. It is a racket. The media is a racket. The Democratic Party is a racket. And they're keeping black people down.
Well, that's what they're all about. There's, every election, they run into our neighborhood. They say, "Oh well, if you don't vote for our candidate, you're going to lose this. You're going to lose that. You're going to lose this. You're going to lose that." I implore any listeners within the sound of my voice, drive into a public housing development. Why does everyone have cars, big screen TVs? But then we're told by the politicians that they're barely scraping by. That they can barely make it. They got cable TV, cable news, the whole genre. But then when it comes to election time, the poor victims are run out and talk about, well, we need more, we need more.
Well, can you explain to me, Kevin, because you understand this better than many people in this audience, and you are as what Janine Garofalo, this stuff a lot better than I do, being Lily White like I am. Can you explain to me what the role Acorn served, the now almost defunct Acorn served, come election day, and why the Democratic Party fought so hard to keep them alive?
Acorn was one of these front groups, among many of them, who basically, prior to election, let's say four to six months prior to an election, they will run into a economically depressed area. They will gin up all this crosstalk about, well, this person gets elected, you're going to lose these benefits, they're going to cut this. The school lunch program, children will not be able to play midnight basketball. They will dump more guns into the neighborhood, the whole nine. It is fear-based driven.
I thought it was supposed to be a nonpartisan and a non-political organization.
Right, and I got a Brooklyn to sell you if you believe that, too. Then what they do is they have these voter registration drives. They get a bunch of older gentlemen, older ladies, older gentlemen to sit at tables, register people to vote. This is how it goes. You don't want to register. Why are you going to register Republican? Don't you know they want to take everything from you and give to the big business and all this other stuff? Then you might say, okay, let's register Green Party. Oh, no, child, you don't want to register Green Party because that ain't nothing but really like voting for the Republicans. You want to vote Democrat. Because Democrats, Franklin D. Roosevelt, have taken care of us, made sure we've had this, made sure we had that. No, it's not Acorn per se, but there is a script that those people who work and register people as for part of Acorn have a script, and this is how they do it, Andrew. They basically shame you into voting Democrat, because they tell you that if you don't vote Democrat, you're going to lose everything. Black folks are going to be lynched. It's going to be slavery all over again. I remember in 2000 where I would get emails prior to the 2000 general election saying, well, if George W. Bush won, along with his Republican allies, the plantations were going to open back up. Black folks were going to be slaves. You wouldn't even be able to walk down the street because they would throw you in jail. Okay, 8 years later, what happened? Nothing. Basically, these people use race as their foil all the time, Andrew, and it has got to stop. It has got to be exposed. That's why I am a conservative. Like you said to Mr. Baldwin earlier, I discovered that I was conservative in my 20s. I got sick and tired of the genre of being told I was a victim because of my skin color. I could not achieve because of my skin color. And the best thing for me to do was to continue voting like my parents and grandparents have voted in the past. Because somehow I will get some type of leg up. The only way I got a leg up was doing it myself. And that's what I did.
Well, you know, you have the exact same trajectory that I did. I was a pathetic kid in my 20s, expecting the world to be handed to me. I might as well have been Kurt Cobain without the ability to write lyrics or sing songs, because I thought that the world was a woeful place. And then one day I decided to start putting one foot in front of the other, started to work. Lo and behold, I kept doing it over and over. Next thing I know, I was a Republican. So it may have been socially awkward. My family, many in my family and my friends may have rejected me for it, but I sleep well at night in a very nice house.
There you go.
Well, thank you, Kevin Martin from Project 21. You do incredible, incredible work, and thank you for standing up for James O'Keefe. You were there on the stage debating that night that the left and Max Blumenthal and Salon.com claimed that James O'Keefe was a racist and that he had put together a racist confab. That racist confab was at Georgetown Law Center, where some of the great cross burnings of the latter 20th century happened. And Kevin Martin was there in his black, lovely black skin to participate in it. We exposed that racist falsehood. It seems to me that that is all the Democratic Party has in 2010. Like as if somebody has thrown water on the circuit board of their computer, and it's just frazzling out, saying racist, 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 racist. It almost seems like it's the demise of a once great party. This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Andrew Breitbart sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Call 800-449-8255 and go to michaelsavage.com. Rob from Virginia, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I was up at the event on Saturday, and what was
the racist event where the N-word was hurled 15 times, yet not a single video camera was able to catch it.
I was there for 9 hours. From 10 in the morning till 7 at night, and I didn't hear one slur or curse word from anybody at any time, and I was within, 2 feet of Mr. Frank and 10 feet of Mr. Lewis, and I was immediately adjacent to Mr. Waxman. I heard plenty of boos and Kill the Bill, but there was an awareness among everybody who was talking to each other up there, and that was going up a lot. This is the first event of this kind I've ever been to.
Rob, where were they? Were they milling about? Did it seem like they were there? Obviously, Henry Waxman, all the people that people tell me that were down there walking around are people whose poll ratings are below George Bush on his worst day of his presidency. It seems to me that they were out there as if they had gone through the list and said, you guys are the 10 most unpopular people. Will you go out there and try and make some news?
Well, there were some no votes that came through that got cheered, but the protesters after the morning session basically positioned themselves between the House office buildings and the Capitol. And we were surprised, all of us who were, again, talking to each other at the various buildings, that these guys, we were calling it running the gauntlet, and they would walk on the surface streets and across the lawn into the office building instead of taking what we thought would be a subterranean way of getting there. So we thought it was pretty, actually at the time we were saying, hey, this is not bad that they're exposing themselves to the people and maybe they should get credit for doing that. But I was standing exactly where the cameras were trained, the ones I've seen in the media coverage, and didn't hear anything. Of course, it's impossible to prove that something didn't happen. But it's out of character with everybody I talked to and everybody I observed. It was simply not the level of vehement anger. The people were being very nasty. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of talk, if we do anything nasty, it's going to label everything we're doing here, so everybody stay in line. And that word was going around. So
everybody there is very aware of how the mainstream media works and how the left works. Everybody knows Zelensky. Nobody knew it 3 years ago. Everybody knows it now. Everybody knows that the mainstream media is the number one aider and abettor of the Democratic Party's tricks. Everybody there is aware. If somebody had said it, I fear for the person who said the N-word. The person's neck would have been ripped off by a fellow Tea Partier because they would ruin it for the whole. People are sophisticated. This is 2010. This is not who we are. This is not 1964, Selma. Thank you very much, Rob. Tracy from Wisconsin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Andrew. Can you hear me?
I can.
I really like you. Thank you for taking my call. Great subject. This has been so upsetting to watch CNN and MSNBC the last 3 days. I guess it's just the arrogance and the hypocrisy of the administration and also the media in general I think back to the Bret Baier interview, for example, and how it was kind of like, how dare you ask the president a serious question? It's like no one is allowed to ask this man a question regarding this monstrosity of a
Nobody's allowed to talk to Senator Landrieu to ask her why she took a $300 million bribe. Nobody's allowed to go to Russ Carnahan's town hall meeting to ask questions. We're going to send the SEIU down. It is no longer Washington, D.C. politics. It's Chicago politics, and the mainstream media allowed for it to happen. They are the ones that are going to suffer the most in the coming years, more than the Democratic Party in November, unless they change their evil ways. Thank you so much for coming on the Savage Nation. This evening, if you have not had enough of me and you want to do something completely bizarre, please join me in something that I don't even know what it is. It's a virtual pizza party for Chuck DeVore. Go to ChuckDeVore.com and me. We're going to be eating virtual pizza tonight together. This is Andrew Breitbart, and this is the Savage Nation.